Hi, this is Dave Pryor. Welcome to Iteration 3 of Leading Agile's podcast, Sound Notes. So today, I've got one of our coaches here. Jim Hayden has taken some time out of his morning, and we're going to talk a little bit about Agile transformation and focus on some very specific things that are core to team stability. So Jim, thank you for taking time out of your morning for the call.
Thanks, Dave. Pleasure to be here.
So before we get into the topic, can you give people a little bit of a sense of your background? Because your background is similar in some ways to certain Agile thought leaders, but different than a lot of coaches.
I actually backed into project management. I started out my life flying for the Air Force and did that for about 15 years, and then came into the project management community as a business project manager. I got some great advice from somebody early on that says, don't be a project manager, name only, actually be a project manager. So I went and got some education and did that. I actually came into the financial services arena, spent most of my time with big upfront planning, heavily gated, process-centric software, and actually got dissatisfied in that because I found the more process and the more we try to big plan up front, the worse it got, seemingly. So I started looking for other alternatives, kind of gravitated towards lean and theory constraints and agile. And so I've been an agile practitioner for about, the last 8 years.
Cool. And your military service, you want to mention that?
I flew for the Air Force, flew F-4s and F-15s, coming up actually on 25 years from Desert Storm this year.
That's great. Thank you for your service.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
So before we get into the main topic, just because this is something I just picked up on. So your financial services background, the work there and the measurements and sort of the metrics and the way of looking at the world through numbers, has that affected your coaching, your kind of outlook on coaching, do you think?
I think it does in a way, because if nothing else, I think I'm a little bit more empathetic for what people are going through because I've lived it myself.
Okay. Cool. Thank you. So we're going to talk about transformation, and when you and I were talking over the weekend about some of the things that you've seen, there's some core stuff that you've found are really important. And one of them kind of flows out of the Leading Agile idea of stable teams, the well-groomed backlog, and producing increments. Do you want to, could you walk through that briefly for folks who may not be familiar with that?
Those are three of the core things we're trying to address. And the first thing is, organizations need to have stable teams to flow work to. And it's those stable teams that have the best chance of producing a groomed backlog. And the groomed backlog is essential for being able to produce a working, tested increment of code on a regular basis. If you don't have stable teams, you can't produce that kind of groomed backlog. And if you don't have the groomed backlog, it's really hard to produce that code.
Cool. And just to ring our own bell for a second, this is core to the way that we approach the work when we're working with new teams.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the challenges that, we need stable teams, or we come into a client and say, hey, we need stable teams. And they go, well, what does that mean? And, they're really good at putting names on a list on a piece of paper. But the pragmatic aspect of stability seems to elude them.
And that was smooth like butter. So let's talk about stability with that perfect segue. So when we were talking over the weekend, you mentioned that there's five areas that you think are really, really important to focus on with stability. So what we're going to do, if you're listening, is we're going to talk about those five areas, and then we're going to talk about some ways that you can measure that work and actually quantify what's going on. So take us through your five areas.
Well, okay, thanks, Dave. Yeah, the five areas are things that, I don't know, I seem to find that I'm dealing with constantly with these five different issues, and they all seem to affect team stability. The first thing is just the staffing, and we'll talk a little bit about that. The second thing is unplanned work. The third thing that I deal with is too much WIP. Fourth thing I deal with is churn on the team. And the fifth thing is what I call dead weight.
Okay. So staffing.
Okay. So, well, staffing is really interesting. So people will, organizations will form teams. They put names on paper. Oftentimes there's a bunch of TBDs because they don't have the right number of resources in a particular skill set, or they quarter allocate people. The end result is that we have teams that don't have necessarily the right skill sets, the right bandwidth, the number of people that they need to have on that team to do what's being asked of the team. And so the team becomes very unstable. They can't actually produce the things that they need to produce.
So this is really common. Like in the classes, the Certified Scrum Master classes and the CSPO classes that I teach, everyone is chock full of people who are like, yeah, I'm on a team here and I'm on a team there. And can we do it anyway? And my response is always, well, you can still do Scrum, but it's just not going to work the way it's supposed to.
That's exactly what I find. And so it's really interesting because I'll have organizations that will have, you know, 15 teams. And they've got, you know, people spread across three different teams. They may have a bunch of TBDs because this particular skill set is lacking in the organization, or they haven't backfilled headcount. And so they've got these teams up and running, but they've got these gaps. And so the teams are expected to perform at a certain level and a certain quality, and they just can't because they just don't have the bodies or the skill set or the experience or expertise available to them.
Okay, so we're obviously advocating for stable, fully dedicated teams. But when we get through the other four items, when we come back to this, we'll talk about how to measure it.
Correct.
So let's talk about unplanned work.
Well, unplanned work is, so let's say you have a fully staffed team. Just because that name's on the paper and they're there, administratively, doesn't mean that they're there to actually do the work. And unplanned work steals that. So you have a SEV1 incident, this person happens to have the expertise or experience, and they get yanked from what you were planning on doing, and they have to go work on this other thing. So the net is they're not available to work with the team on what you've asked them to do. And invariably, when these things happen, this unplanned work occurs, the commitment from the planned work doesn't change necessarily. And so again, there's this instability, this created within the team.
Well, and it's not just the emergencies. It's executive who read a magazine on airplane.
Oh, yeah.
The light bulb explodes and he's got to go stop the world because of his new idea.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you've got, that's something the Scrum Master should manage, but if that's not happening, it is something we should pay attention to too. Now, what about, there's too many whips. So people have seen 50 Shades of Grey. There's whips all over the place.
Yeah. No, I mean this whip is there's really two aspects that I've seen. One is just the company. I mean, everybody seems they like starting stuff and not finishing things, and so they seem to think that hey, if I've got all this stuff working, that it'll get done sooner. And what it actually does is it steals bandwidth from everything else, and so everything kind of goes along. It's kind of like sticking a bunch of dough into a spaghetti extruder and you're making angel hair pasta. It just goes on and on and on forever, but nothing actually gets done.
But there's a perception. People feel like they're busy,
Everyone's busy. Everyone's busy. It's like they're on that truck on that gravel road, and they've floored it, but they're kicking up gravel and they're saying, look how much gravel I'm kicking up, but the truck's not moving.
Yeah. I think that this to me is one of the things that, even for me on a personal level, it's still always a problem. But if you're not sure about why you should limit whip, I would suggest that you check out Jim Benson's book, Why Limit Whip. It's got some great stuff.
And so there's that, there's the planned aspect is the willing, injection of work. The other thing I see is kind of a little bit more insidious is that, underground black market of WIP of work that's going on, and that typically is it's that work that's not visible. It's that work that some resource manager says, "Oh, by the way, I need you to do this as well," and so that whatever they've asked of this particular resource on the team includes a date, includes a commitment to somebody, and while that person is busy working on it, there may not be necessarily all the other things that need to be in place to make that piece of work come to fruition.
Yeah.
But again, it steals the bandwidth and it makes the team unstable.
Cool. All right. So churn.
Churn is really the introduction and pulling people on and off teams all the time. It can be, hey, I've got a team and they're pulling people off every week. They move this person to this team, then they move them to that team. Or if you have high turnover, I've seen a lot of offshore delivery teams where they're pulling resources right out of college. They work for a little bit and then they leave. The net effect is that you form these teams, and Tuckman's, forming, storming, norming, performing, you kind of lock the teams in the forming and storming phases. They never get to that norming and performing stage.
So this is an interesting thing to me, and especially the way that you just expressed it, because I see this in the stuff that I do, come up two different ways. One is there's all the U.S. organizations where they think people are cogs that they can just slap in and out of teams and they'll just be completely plug and play, which never works. Mm-hmm. Or there's certain countries where the way things are going, people are going to switch jobs every month or two, the way it was back here in the beginning of the dot-com boom. And to say, well, we should just never have churn, that may not be possible. And so I guess one of the questions I have for you is, obviously we don't want churn, but is it safe to say that we're not trying to say any of these things are like they're bad and evil and you have to stop, but you're trying to give people a way to look at them together to see what's actually causing instability within the team? What are the different factors that are affecting it, and how is that playing out?
Yeah, and by giving them insight into what's going on, you can make an eyes wide open decision. What are we going to do about it? You can make an ROI decision. Is this worth it? Is it not worth it? At least be aware of it and be able to put your finger on and say, is this something I'm going to choose to do something about or not?
Yeah, I think that's really important because it's an accepted risk sometimes. I mean, a company may say, yeah, we know you don't want us to do this because we're agile, but we, for whatever business reason, we're making a choice to do it that way anyway.
Absolutely. And this is the whole point about being pragmatic in terms of how you apply agile. I mean, there's a schoolhouse solution, and we can say this is how it should be necessarily, or I wouldn't say that, but I mean, this is how a lot of people look at it. And then there's, hey, let's just deal with reality.
Yeah.
So at least let's see what's causing it and say, more often than not, stable teams lead to better groomed backlogs. Stable teams and better groomed backlogs lead to an increased chance that you're going to produce a working tested increment of code on a regular basis.
Yeah.
So let's make the trade-offs and at least be aware of it.
Cool. All right. So our last one, we've got the the people that don't do anything.
Yeah. So, this dead weight, and this is really funny because it's kind of like an open secret. I mean, I don't know that. When I flew, I mean, it was something that we had in the flying community because some guys would say they'd rather have that guy's weight in gas than have him in the aircraft. You know, which is fortunately it was only one or two guys over my flying career, but you know, it's the same sort of thing. You get on a team, and people know these. They would rather not even have the person on the work because at least they would not introduce anything bad that had to be cleaned up.
Yeah.
So, you know, oftentimes, and this is the one factor that, and I've seen it, you know, because after I've been at a client site for a while, people come up to me inside and they'll start complaining about a particular team member or something, you know, somebody that's just really not, pulling their weight. And it's an open secret in the organization, and the management knows it too, and they move that person from one team to one team to one team, and as their method of dealing with it, and it frankly makes team members, the people that are out there, frustrated and angry.
So this is a complicated thing, though. I mean, I've been. So you said I'd rather have the person's weight in gas. I've been on the teams where we said we'd rather have to work extra without a person than have that person there. So we don't even want the gas. Just don't put that guy on our ship.
Absolutely, absolutely, and that's true.
But there's the coach and the trainer in me wants to say, well, this is the team's problem to solve. But then there's I've been on those teams with that guy, and there's an HR component to this as well. I mean, you can't just, you know, it would be great to be able to say, well, let's do what Mike Cohn says. Let's just vote him off the island if that's what we have to do. But if you're at a big company, you can't always just say, hey, you shove off, buddy.
No, that's absolutely true. And so, again, this is one of those kind of things of awareness. In this case, it tends to be whispered and anecdotal.
Yeah.
And what we try to measure and address with this particular factor is just to acknowledge that it exists without being without naming individuals. And this one's kind of tricky. And the thing that we've, in fact, talked about measurement, this is the one that we have to be very careful about how we try to go about obtaining. And what I found that typically works the best is to kind of give a general question that basically asks people, on the team, so we'll know which team is being there. Give them a 5-point Likert scale that says, agree with the statement. Everyone's pulling their weight or not pulling their weight. Or agree with the statement, you know, everyone pulls their weight on this team. And you can get a strongly agree or a strongly disagree, and at least it's an indication.
Sure, like a fist to five kind of thing. And that way you're not vilifying any one person, which is probably
absolutely, absolutely. And the point being is that if you find that this team is starting to trend down in a particular way, why?
Yeah.
I mean, it could be all sorts of reasons. I mean, life happens.
Yeah.
And You could have somebody that has something going on in their personal life that is kind of dragging them down, is distracting them, and has nothing to do with them personally. It just their life situation is making it hard, and maybe we can rally around that person or help out in that situation.
I think that's really – I'm glad you brought that up because I hadn't thought of that a minute ago, but that is also really important. I mean, you can have dead weight for a variety of reasons, and they're not all like – this guy sucks because he's, you know, on drugs or whatever. But sometimes it's people have personal issues. And I would hope that a good, strong team would carry that person for a little while, knowing that when that person recovers, they're going to pick up the slack. But to have a way of tracking that in a sort of non-accusatory manner, I think, is a very great thing to have.
And here's the thing, too. So, you know, if you look at the team, I mean, team stability is important. And if this is happening, how do we help that individual? How do we address that and still not drop the ball on, I want some team stability? So maybe we need to, you know, maybe this is something where we move this person aside, not in a pejorative way, but how do we help protect that person and deal with that situation with them, for them personally, and yet maybe introduce a little bit more churn in the organization or in the team
create some balance.
And balance. And again, that's an eyes wide open business decision. We're running a real business in real time with real people dealing with real life.
Yeah, it's weird because you do cross over into this world between being emotionally sensitive to people as well as the need to get work done. I think to go in either direction all the way is probably not a healthy thing, but there's got to be some balance in there.
Yeah. This just gives you awareness.
Yeah. So let's talk briefly about the ways that you're measuring this, and then what we're going to post with the podcast is a sample of one of the reports that you use when you're looking at this stuff. So if you're trying to find sort of a visual way of seeing it in your head, you should be able to find a PDF along with the podcast. So how do we look at staffing? How do you measure that?
Okay, well, just broadly, for all these different factors, we try to measure it in and normalize it to a from a 0 to a 100%, or use a 1 as the perfect and some percentage below that is not so good. So from a staffing standpoint, we're looking at what are the actual number of spots or roles filled divided by what we believe that team should have. So for instance, if we believe this team should have 5 different roles, a number of different skill sets, we're gonna divide by 5, and then if we have an opening, it'd be 4 divided by 5. If we have somebody that's half staffed on something, it'd be 3.5 divided by 5, and that will give us a ratio that says for this particular factor, this is what it is. And in each of these factors, we try to separate so that what I'm measuring in one does not ripple into the others.
So this, I'm going to come back and ask you a question about this at the end, but go ahead, let's walk through the rest of them. For unplanned work, how do you measure that?
Okay, so for the unplanned work, we're now going to look at, let's say across a sprint, we're going to look in terms of 10 days, let's say it's two business weeks. We're going to say, I plan on this person being here available for, you know, 20 half-day units, let's say.
Okay.
And they got yanked away for a day and a half to go work on something. Well, we just subtract that day and a half or those 3 units from the 20, so it's 17 divided by 20. And again, it's out of a perfect 1.
Now,
so
let me ask you
a
question.
For the whole time, they'd get that full credit. If not, they don't.
So I want to ask you a question about this, because
sure.
I've worked with teams where my guidance to them has been, if you know that you're regularly pulled off of your work for 5 hours every single sprint for emergency work, you should take that out of your capacity before you plan your work.
Correct. And okay. So if
that's a separate
case,
thing.
Well, no. But so if you knew that you were going to be there, instead of having 20 units, you would plan for that and pull that out.
Okay, good.
If that's a regular
occurrence. So you can plan for disturbances, but you're talking about just interrupts.
Yes, just interrupts.
Cool. All right. So let's talk about WIP.
WIP is a little bit more. It's a little bit more of a challenge. What we're typically using is their utilization. So if they have if they're utilized, 135%, then we take that 35%, and we look at how many, in aggregate over the team, how many additional FTE are you adding to the to the workload. So okay. if you had five team members and they were all 10% overutilized, we would say that's another half FTE. And so what we're doing is we're giving, if you have a half FTE over, we're going to decrement 10% off of one. If you're a full FTE in addition to your normal team, then we'll decrement, 20%.
Okay.
So you go from one to 0.8 to, and again, the more you're overutilized, the lower the score will be.
Sure. Okay. And what about churn?
Churn is, we're kind of looking at, again, this is kind of the pragmatic standpoint. We're just giving credit for how long have you actually been working with these folks. And so we typically use like a 5 or 6 sprint. So let's just call it 3 months. And so we give, if you've been on this team, a new hire, the first week you get a 0.25. You've been on for a month, you get a full one. And we just divide by 3, and then we just take the average across all the team members. So if everyone's been on the team for 3 months, everyone gets a 3, and it works out to be a 1.
So the fact that a brand new team is going to have a lower churn score isn't necessarily bad. It just means they haven't been together long enough. Maybe we shouldn't fully expect this, expert level of stability.
Absolutely. And again, it's just transparency.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the dead weight measurement, kind of a fist to five type approach before, but can you walk through that again briefly? And then I would like to ask you a question before we talk about your report.
Yeah, so we'll take this kind of pulse weekly, and we're just asking, and we just want people to agree or disagree with the statement. How strongly do you agree or disagree? Again, no attribution, it's just a subjective assessment. Do you feel everyone's pulling their weight or not pulling their weight? And it's a way for us to find information without getting into the specifics of who. And it's out of a 5-point scale. We just average the results and divide it by 5. And that, again, gives us our indice over out of a perfect 1. And, again, it just gives us an indication of where the team, it's just a pulse,
yeah.
as it were.
Now, do you use that in retrospectives as well?
We can. Some of the teams do.
Okay.
More often than not, it's just simply another data point in terms of overall stability. And again, you can have teams that exhibit some of the attributes of being unstable, but they're able to deliver what they promise,
yeah.
and so they're adjusting. And now the open question is, well, how long can you really sustain that with that heroic effort? Or just one of the things they have to deal with. Again, it's just another data point. How do we?
Yeah.
Measured performance over time.
Okay, so I've been on teams where one particular project I can think of, we were fully staffed. Mm-hmm. There was never a point where we were not fully staffed. We would have scored top marks on that. But we were having to it literally felt like I was driving by the bus stop every day and saying, I need 4, get in the back, got a netbook, you can read it on the way to the office. We were just running through guys because none of them were capable of doing what we needed to do. So our churn scored was bad, but we could have fixed that by carrying some dead weight and just letting some of those guys sit around. Do you find that people try to game this to make it rise up, or do people really look at it like this is a metric that's going to help us understand what's happening?
This is where you just have to, there's always gonna be somebody that wants to try to game it. And I don't think any measurement, any metric is perfect that you can, I don't know that it's worth the effort to try to make it watertight and be perfect.
Right.
If you're going to have people that are going to game the system,
they're going to cheat one way or another. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you've got to be able to stand back, look at that, and kind of ask yourself the question, is this being gamed? And if you see that, well, take it with a grain of salt.
Cool. All right, so you've got a sample report that we're going to include with this. Do you want to say anything about that or the format of it?
Again, from an overall, we take these 5 scores and we average them to get an overall indice for a particular team. We actually have pairs of product owner teams and delivery teams working in many of the clients that I'm dealing with. And so we look at stability at both the individual team level, and we also aggregate it for the channel. So, you could have a very stable delivery team, but have a totally unstable product owner team. And that makes it really hard to have a really groomed backlog. So if regardless how stable your delivery team is, if your product owner team, which is helping groom the stories, isn't, It's kind of real, you know, again, you're going to have, you know, not very good shared understanding. It's going to be really hard to produce that working tested increment regularly.
Yeah. So since you brought this up, could you explain product owner teams for something? Because that is a leading agile thing, and it's part of the approach that we take. But there may be some folks who are not familiar with that concept.
Okay. In our construct, it's our middle layer. It's really that they have taken the prioritized features that have been set up by the organization and fed down to a particular channel, in this case, this particular product owner team. And that product owner team's responsibility is to take those features, decompose them into user stories that can be consumed by the delivery team. And so they're really articulating the what and the how, you know, what done looks like.
But when we say PO team, I mean, a lot of people would know, well, in Scrum, you've got a product owner. You're only supposed to have one. But that's a lot of work for one person to do sometimes.
It is. And so our product owner teams will oftentimes, because, you know, look, the diversity of the technology stack that we're using in many of these large clients that we deal with, one person can't embody all the knowledge for all the different things that we're dealing with. So they have a team of folks that are helping them, you know, break out these features and what are the different components or what are the different modules within the system that are affected. Sure. And they bring a different perspective. So as we decompose these features into user stories, they provide all the different vantage points of expertise that help us do that.
Cool. All right. So when people get to listen to this and they take a look at the report, if they want to get in touch with you, what is the best way for them? I mean, they can go to leadingagile.com, obviously, but if they want to track you down specifically, what is the best way to find you?
Well, actually, the Leading Agile website and my contact information there or LinkedIn. I would say that, check out my Twitter handle, but I can barely spell
another Twitter. Non-Twitterer. We're going to have to fix that.
I can barely spell Twitter.
It will be my personal mission to get everyone at the company on Twitter. But so they can find you on LinkedIn. They can find you on the site. You've got a bio page. They look under the coaches area. Mm-hmm. And cool. Thank you. I really appreciate you spending some time to talk about this. This is a really cool
way of looking
at stuff. And I'm sure it's going to be very helpful for people. So
thank you
very much.
No, thank you very much.
Cool.